Morning and welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Well, nobody said it would be boring, and it certainly hasn't been. Governor Jesse Ventura is wrapping up his first full year in office, and it has been a lively year. The legislative session, the big rebate, the book, the big plan, the Playboy interview, the wrestling match, the trip to Japan, the great seal versus frogman debate. No shortage of headlines, and today Governor Ventura has come by our studios to take a look back at this past year and a look ahead to some of the big issues facing the state in 2000. As always, we invite you to join our conversation. Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest, and if you have a question for the governor, give us a call, 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Governor, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks, Gary. Always a pleasure. I seem like a regular here now. I manage to get here about once a month, I think.
Well, that's
pretty
great.
Well.
Yeah, it's great. Did 1999 turn out like you thought it would at this time last year?
You don't know what to expect, really. You know, it was kind of whirlwind after the election, and of course, we had to dive into the budget, which looms ahead of you right when you win an election like that, and so that consumed our time, and then made it through the legislative session, and so I think it went pretty. I'm very pleased with how the year went as a whole. I think that Minnesota's on good ground. Our feet are solidly on the ground now. All my commissioners have been in place now for a good solid almost a year, and we have good direction of knowing where we want to go.
If you were May Shunk and a teacher, what grade would you give yourself?
Pass. You know, they have those classes that are pass and fail.
But those are the easy ones.
I don't, I won't grade myself. I'll tell you, Gary, how I grade myself. I go home every night and know that I did the best job to my ability, and I can look in the mirror every night knowing that I've done so. And as long as I can go home at night and look in the mirror, then that's all I have to worry about.
Is there anything looking back on the year here that you wish you could do over, something that didn't turn out the way you wanted it to?
Oh, certainly. I suppose the Playboy interview, it drew far more hoopla and response than it needed.
Mm.
You know, it was, had it only been read by Playboy readers, it would have been much ado about nothing. Which was how it was intended. That's why you do the interview for the particular magazine or periodical that you're talking to. But the mainstream press took it and really exploded it far more than it needed to be, because it's just personal opinions and it doesn't really have a basis for how I govern. And, you know, I want people to judge me on what happens on what I do in the office, not necessarily on what my personal opinion on something might be.
Looking forward, what's your big goal for the next year?
Well, we've got the capital budget coming up, where the legislature comes back in capital bonding, which is coming up in the session. You know, I want it to be lean and mean. You know, I want to very much, you know, Governor Carlson worked very hard in the legislature to get us back our AAA bond rating. We certainly don't want to jeopardize that at all with the bonding companies. It's a good time to do some bonding. Of course, the rates are favorable right now, but like anything, you don't want to, it's like your own personal life, you don't want to go crazy with that credit card.
Mm.
Because it can end up causing you trouble down the line, and so you got to be prudent on the bonding that you do. And again, I'll run my bonding on the philosophy, we'll do what's necessary, not necessarily what's nice.
What about over on the cash account? You've got that big $1.6 billion surplus.
Projected. That's the key word, Gary. And again, and I've said it many times, if I believed in projections, I wouldn't be governor. because no one projected that I'd be here. We have actually around $500 million in the coffers right now. And really, we wouldn't have that had the legislature listened to me and taken my lead. They put a cap on the rebate. This is money that is actually left over from last year's biannual budget. So had they not capped my rebate, this $500 million would have already gone back to the taxpayers, and it would have been an additional around $250 to $300 on everybody's rebate check out there. And they would have already gotten it, but because they put a cap on it, and why they did that, I don't know what their thinking was in doing so. We now sit with another $500 million right now, roughly, that is in the bank. I want to give that back. It should have gone back anyway. That's off last biannual budget. You know, that was the clearing of the books June 30th, like I said, and the way I want to do it at biannually at June 30th of every other year, we balance the books, and whatever is in surplus should go back to the people. This is in surplus. It should go back.
Do we have to wait, though, till the end of this biennium to get the money? Or?
No, I would like to see them go ahead and move forward and give us another check this summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just take this. It wouldn't take much for them to do that, and certainly we're very well set up to do it in a sales tax rebate. We now have the experience to do it. Matt Smith over at the Department of Revenue would be ready and raring to go. They know exactly what to do now. They're not breaking new ground now.
Mm-hmm.
We know how to do it now.
With the projected surplus, many legislators have been talking about increased spending in various areas. Republicans have been particularly looking at the area of increased spending for roads and bridges and the like. Would you support some increases in those areas?
Well, I definitely want to come out with a plan for transportation, but again, the plan has to be more long-term. You can't just look at it as, hey, we've got some money in our pocket, let's do a quick fix. We need to look at what is our plan of ongoing expenditures for transportation as a whole throughout the whole state of Minnesota. I would like to see us look at rededicating certain taxes, putting them back, like the tax that we have on new cars. Right now, when you buy a new car, that tax goes into the general fund. I would like to see some of that switched over into an ongoing transportation fund to where when people buy a new car, the tax they pay for that car, they can be assured that it's going to go into the transportation system, roads, highways, and other forms of transportation out there to help alleviate the problem that we so real have. I mean, it's a real problem out there, as we all know right now, that we must do something on transportation. But we can't just look at it as just a quick fix to get reelected this coming fall.
Now, we've got a full bank of callers, and I want to get to them. But one more question
Sure.
here before we get to the callers. Should we be stewing about what's going to happen here on January 1, Y2K, terrorism? We hear about all these dire threats and so on. Is this something we should be stewing about? What's your best guess?
My position on this is to everyone to enjoy the new year and the change of the millennium. Go out, have fun, do what you're going to do, enjoy it. I don't believe anything is going to happen other than a glitch here and a glitch there. I'm certainly going forward. Enjoy the Gopher game that afternoon. If they fall behind, don't blame it on Y2K. I don't think whether Glenn Mason and the Gophers win or lose won't be based upon Y2K. Enjoy it. And again, but I will take the opportunity now to tell people, enjoy your New Year's, enjoy the new millennium, but please, if you're going to consume alcoholic beverages, don't get on the roads. Stay where you're at, have a designated driver, call a cab, do whatever it takes, but do not be out on the roads, because I'm warning you, my state troopers are going to be out in mass that night, and if you're drinking and driving, you're going to get caught, and you're going to go to jail, and there's no excuse for it.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour, and again, we have a full bank of callers, so don't call in with a question right now because you'll just get frustrated, but jot the number down and give us a try here in 10 minutes or so. 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Dwight, you're first. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much, Governor. I really appreciate your taking the time for these public conversations.
Hi, Dwight. Well, it's not a problem.
My question, with McCain and Bradley touting campaign finance reform, it reminds me that shortly after your election, you really talked about Minnesota's matching money helping you in your campaign. And I'm wondering if your support or where you're at these days on campaign finance reform in the state of Minnesota?
Well, campaign finance reform in a lot of ways is it's a double-edged sword. It's people should have the ability to contribute to a campaign. Certainly that's almost a freedom of speech type thing, that you should be allowed to participate in the process. You should be allowed to donate to campaigns. But it's a double-edged sword in the fact that you've also got this soft money and money that's out there that obviously is buying influence. And, so certain reforms are definitely needed. The matching state funds helped me tremendously, but not just me, because Mayor Coleman and Attorney General Humphrey actually got more money from that pot than I did, so it did help them as much or more as it did me. I think something needs to be done both nationally and locally, or it needs to be done particularly by the candidates to keep their integrity. I'm still a believer, and I still do not accept special interest or PAC money, and I will not, and it's still a position of the Reform Party not to do so. And I will continue to honor that personally, and I think if we get more candidates like Senator McCain and former Senator Bradley, that certainly it'll help to get it to the front burner and something to be done about it.
You think we should essentially move to a system where campaigns are financed almost wholly with public money?
Well, it's a thought. You look at it that way. It's a thought that you can look at it. I just wish they'd get rid of the soft money. You know, the money where people are allowed to give huge amounts to a party, and then the party doles it out, because that's where I think the trouble comes in, and that's where the sinister end of it happens, is who's supporting the particular party and the soft money that flows into the party.
Now, Gen Z, your question for the governor?
Thanks for taking my call. Good morning, Governor Ventura. How are you?
Hi, Gen Z. How are you? Did you have a good Christmas?
Oh, excellent.
Good.
How about you?
Very well. I got over my cold, so it went good.
Oh, great. And before I get to my question, quickly, I want to wish you and your family a great new year and to thank you all very much for the holiday reception you had back on the 16th. That was just a blast.
Well, we had a lot of fun. It was fun to watch all the youngsters come into the residence, which is always a joy, because there's nothing better than to see the little kids and how they're dressed in the cold weather, be it Halloween or the holidays.
This is true, and some of us big kids as well.
Okay.
Anyway, my question kind of continues on the last caller's theme about campaign reform, and it's specifically about doing something to limit the length of campaigns for office. And I know from some things you've been quoted as saying that you are as sick as I am and sick as everybody I know of candidates campaigning for office over a year before the election in question, as has been going on nationally with the presidential candidates. But to tie it kind of to the service not systems piece of your big plan, it sounds to me like that might have some very good ideas for, among other things, shortening the length of time that candidates campaign for office. So I guess my question really is, where are you guys in your administration now in terms of specific ideas for making campaigns reasonable? And do you think that could eventually become a model for improving the way campaigns go nationwide?
Well, Gen Z, it's been a case of I've more or less just talked about it. We haven't done anything about it, or we really have nothing on the table to do anything about it. But it's a good point you bring up, and I'll jot it down and we'll take a look at it a little harder, because I agree with you. I think that it's getting borderline ridiculous when we start running into presidential campaigns 2 years before the actual election takes place. I mean, what'll eventually happen then? The moment an election happens, within 3 weeks they'll start running for the next one. I would love to see us put a time limit on when a campaign can actually start and when it be allowed to start, because I personally get tired of fielding questions on the presidential campaign when it's not even the year the election's going to take place. And, it makes good cannon fodder for the press and the media, but I think we need to challenge them to go out and find other things to talk about and be creative in other ways other than starting elections 2 years ahead of time, which in turn, when they do that, look what happens to the amount of money people then have to spend to get elected, because the longer the campaign is, rest assured, the more money you're going to have to spend to be viable.
Bob, your question?
As you know so well, Governor, politicians are competing and advocating how much of the state's large budget surplus to give back to taxpayers. But the problem is that you and too many other politicians fail to deal with the disgraceful lack of decent facilities to house the homeless. So my question to you, Governor, is instead of your being so callously indifferent and saying that charity should take care of the homeless problem and some people are homeless because they want to be homeless, which is utter nonsense, why don't you do what is decent, namely provide leadership in dealing with the problem of 700 homeless people sleeping outside in Minneapolis and St. Paul because housing for the homeless is so grossly inadequate?
Well, why don't you do something about it?
I do my little bit, but I'm not the governor.
Well, wait. Well, why don't you run for public office then, and instead of talking about it and being critical and criticizing those that do, why don't you take an active role and become part of government and institute the change? It's simple to talk about it on the outside. You know, do something. Run for office and win.
Well, you're the governor.
And then you can come on board.
More for the homeless than I do. I do my little bit, but you're the governor, and you ought to provide that leadership. Don't you think it's disgraceful that 700 people in Minneapolis and St. Paul are sleeping outside because housing facilities are so grossly inadequate?
Well, why aren't there more?
Why aren't there more what?
More sleeping outside. Because other people have jobs and they work and they maintain themselves, and I'm not anti, you know, I realize some people get a bad shake of the deal, but it's still, you're reliant upon yourself to be successful, and you're asking me to be reliant to everybody else.
No, you should know as governor there's a critical lack of affordable housing, first of all, and that there are a lot of people that are working every day and are still homeless. I challenge you, governor, to go down to the so-called secure waiting area at 1000 Curie Avenue in Minneapolis and spend the night with the 250 guys sleeping on thin mats on the floor, belly to belly and back to back. And most of those guys are working every day, but they can't put together that $1,000 or $1,500 they need for a down payment on an apartment and to pay the first month's rent. Why don't you go along the rivers in Minneapolis and St. Paul with Patrick Wood, a social worker? He'll show you where the homeless are sleeping. Veterans who have chemical problems, mentally ill people that are out there.
Okay. Well, so noted. You know, I guess I don't have really an answer for it.
The issue of housing does keep coming up over and over. Doesn't the state need to do substantially more in this area?
Well, my budget this year was the biggest increase in housing dollars that have been done in the last 20 years, the last biannual budget that I submitted. And certainly, I suppose it's our obligation to do so. But you know, it's still the obligation of people to take it upon themselves to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't help those that don't want to help themselves either.
But as Bob points out, apparently the latest surveys indicate that a lot of the people who are homeless, even to say nothing of living in pretty marginal circumstance, actually have jobs and they're working and everything. They just can't make, you know, ends meet.
Well,
and apparently it has to do with the fact that housing has gotten so much more expensive relative to what people have than it used to be.
Yeah, and that's something we probably should look at is more social homes, more type of, I guess you'd look at the type of communal living then, because, you know, obviously if you're going to build those type of housing developments to accommodate this amount of people, you're not going to be able to build them, you know, somebody has to pick up the tab for it. Mm-hmm. Builders are in business to build homes to make a profit. They can't build them and not make a profit. They can't build them and take a loss on it, otherwise they'll be homeless too. You know, if you conduct business that way. So we need to look at some type of mechanism of maybe using and renovating some buildings and making them almost like barracks then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and have a barrack style of living, which I'm, you know, not opposed to, but people would have to understand that that would be the way it would have to be done. You'd have to live like in a military barracks. Maybe we should look at Fort Snelling and renovating that and offering the opportunity out there to do it.
You think that might
but
be...
But then in... you can't force them to stay there either.
Mm-hmm. You think that might be included in your budget plan for this year's...
It's something we'll certainly look at.
Dennis, your question?
Regarding the MAPE contract that was just negotiated last night, does the state have a policy of just trying to negotiate with the first union that comes along and then trying to use that same those same percentages with other unions as they negotiate?
No, as a matter of fact, we had negotiated, I think, with 15 or 16 unions. MAPE was the last one.
Mm-hmm. And are you satisfied with how that turned out?
Certainly. I'm always happy when management and labor can come together in open negotiations, resolve their problems, and keep everyone working.
There have been some critics who have suggested that the school boards around the state are giving too much to teachers, and that much of the money, the record amount that was appropriated for education last spring, is going to salaries as opposed to new programs. Do you share those in that criticism?
Well, I don't share the criticism. I think that teachers deserve to be paid. They have a very critical job that of educating the young people, but in light of also being paid, they need to be held to standards also, you know, and make sure that the teachers are doing their jobs also, and that, you know, in educating the young people. I'm not opposed to teacher salary increases. They have a difficult, extremely difficult job to do, and they should be paid accordingly. But they, in light of that, though, then we better get results.
Mm-hmm. Richard, you're next.
Hello, Governor.
Yes.
Yeah, say, I live in St. Paul, and I just want to ask a couple of questions on the surplus that you claim we have. Now, you said, I think, $500 million, is that correct?
Roughly speaking,
okay.
Yes. That's in the bank right now.
How many hundreds of millions of dollars worth of bonds did we issue this year, 99?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I think you should, because this is very important. We're paying interest. We have money in the banks that they're collecting virtually no interest. Well, we are borrowing money and paying, I think it's 4% is what our bond rating is. I'm not really sure. It's right around there.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow or other, it just doesn't make any sense to me at all for a state to give money back, which comes from the taxpayers. I read them out of my pocket, too. But then we go out and borrow money and pay money. I don't know what our interest is that we're paying each year, but it's tremendous.
Let me ask you this. Do you pay cash for your house?
That has nothing to do with it.
Yes, it does.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does, because many things are fine to do over the long term. There's nothing wrong with doing long-term spending as well as short-term spending.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour, and if you have a question for the governor, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000.
Gary, I think we need more people running for office. You know, all these critics out there that are, and I enjoy their comments, but I think they need to be involved. If they have such good ideas, then they ought to run for office and bring them forward.
Mm-hmm. We need
get involved.
We need more candidates?
Sure we do. Absolutely we do.
Did you believe that before you decided to run for governor? I would
believe what before
that people should just run for office.
Yeah, absolutely,
Did you see yourself as running for office? Because you had a lot of opinions, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. People should run for office because I'm a firm believer in a constant turnover of government. I don't believe in career politicians. I believe that you come in and you serve and you do one or two terms and then you go back to the private sector and make way for someone else's ideas. But, you know, it's easy to sit out and complain. It's a whole other thing to actually get involved and try to change it and run for office and be successful at it.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest. Again, 651-227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. One question, quick one, before we break for news headlines here. The trip to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, what do you think was the major accomplishment that you...
I think that our major accomplishment was reinforcing trading relationships with our second largest trading partner. Of course, Canada is our first, naturally, because they're north of our border. But Japan has always been an extremely big trading partner with Minnesota, and that we have to treat Minnesota really as its own entity, its own country, really, in the global economy today. You have to go out there... Our rivals are no longer Iowa, the Dakotas, and Wisconsin. Our rivals are the world and other countries in the world, and we have to go out there and be viable in the world economy. And I think the good thing that it did is it reassured Japan that they have a terrific trading partner in Minnesota. Japan naturally, because of their population and their land size, needs agriculture. Well, we are very strong agriculturally here in Minnesota, and so it's a natural link for Minnesota and Japan to be tied that way. And also Japanese people are terrific tourists, and you know, we wanted to ensure that they come to Minnesota and not look at Minnesota as just a stopover, but as a destination. And so that was another thing we wanted to accomplish there, and I think we were very successful at it.
And in Mexico this coming fall?
Yeah, nothing's written in stone yet, but tentatively we'll be going down to Mexico this coming fall, and then possibly Europe sometime the year after.
And then maybe later on China, and clear off our problems with China, get that squared away. And
I don't know if I can do that, but I know the Chinese delegation came here and invited me to go there, and I've never been there before, so... You know, and they sure are another country that certainly could use our agricultural products in light of their population.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest. We'll get to some more callers in just a couple of minutes. Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest. This hour of midday, over the noon hour, we'll talk economics with Chris Farrell. Right now, back to the phones. John's on the line with a question for the governor. John?
Well, it's not a question. It's more of a statement of support. By the way, this is John, the guy with the gunny sacks, and figuring you deserve to rock in yours.
Okay, John.
But seems like a lot of people are going down the wrong way listening to what the media says, or spin doctoring what they want by what you say. And I got friends that voted for you. They listen to the media, and now they don't want to support you no more.
John, let me interrupt here. What is it that the media has reported about the governor that has you feel is in error?
Oh, I mean, if I knew you were going to ask that question, I'd have a list. One of the first things is the comment about the weak minds. Currently, I'm driving cab, and it's amazing how much people spread that around to things that I didn't see printed in the article or seen in one of the interviews I saw. And I think I'm kind of mixing some of my own definition of what that was related to with the religion, and most people are just, they're taking the one statement and stretching it, it seems.
Okay. Which can happen, you know. It I'm not perfect, and I certainly, when I do 25 interviews a week, which I do on a normal basis, I'm going to say things at times that will offend some people, I imagine, when they take things, see, I think the thing that bothered me most was when they said that governor condones tailhook, which was totally wrong. Oh, I said at the very first of that interview, I did not condone what happened, but I understood how and why it happened. And I understood how it can happen. And yet they leave out, see, it's the headline writers. They like to snatch people with the headline and get them with the headline. The headlines aren't always factual for what's in the story of what they do.
It's been a rocky year, you in the media. Has that the worst of the storm passed now?
Well, my problem is that when someone asks me a question, I attempt to answer it. And in the position as governor or a highly elected official, in some ways you're not afforded that luxury, that you really shouldn't answer some questions, because they can be twisted and turned around and all of that stuff. And so my fault is that I answer questions. When I'm asked a question, I attempt to answer it, and my answers aren't always mainstream necessarily on certain things, and you know, but I'm certainly entitled to my opinion, and I enjoy the right of the First Amendment of freedom of speech, and you know, people also are entitled to criticize me. That goes with the territory, and that's fine.
Dennis, your question?
Yes, good morning, Governor.
Hi, Dennis, how are you?
Fine. First, let me tell you that I didn't vote for you, but I certainly enjoyed watching your rise as governor for the state of Minnesota. My question is related to your original campaign platform, and I work construction, and of course, you were quite the talk in the break room early in the morning.
Okay.
And what was going on, but My question is related to three issues that you brought up in your original platform, or perceived issues. And let me list those three. The first was the legalization of prostitution. The second was the decriminalization of marijuana use. And the third was the right to carry a concealed weapon. Those are really probably the only three issues that the group I hang with were interested in, and they got your vote, or you got their votes. My question is where do those issues stand today? Where do they sit on your stove? Which burner are they
in? Well, they're personal viewpoints, you know, and when I'm asked questions, I'll give personal viewpoints. And, you know, in the case of prostitution, I don't condone prostitution, but I also realize that it's not going to go away. I'm a realist, and one must understand that prohibition doesn't mean something's going to disappear and go away just because society or government prohibits it. And I just think that I don't believe that prostitutes should be arrested. I don't think that that in light of our situation where we have an overflow of prisoners right now and our beds are full in all our prisons, that I don't see where it does any good to arrest people for prostitution and put them in jail for that. Mm. That's just my personal opinion again.
Marijuana?
I believe in absolutely we should be looking at industrial hemp. There's no doubt about it. Canada's using it, making tons of products and business off it, and we're not. And it could be an alternative crop for farmers. As far as marijuana that is smoked, I view that as no different than alcohol. You know, or tobacco for that matter. Tobacco and alcohol are legal products that they really buy their legality. How do they get their legality? Well, they pay the government to be legal. And what's interesting about the concept of illegal drugs is that we then take our resources and our money and spend it to make these other drugs illegal, where you've got two very deadly drugs that buy their legality simply by paying taxes. They pay the government. Tobacco pays the government, and alcohol pays the government, and therefore they are legal, where all the other ones are not allowed that flexibility to pay for legality. And I'm very pleased that Governor Johnson of New Mexico has come out very strongly in support of stopping the war on drugs and going after it a different way. Let me give an example, Gary, of how really ridiculous the war on drugs is. I sit on the Board of Pardons along with Supreme Court, head Supreme Court Justice Kathleen Blatz and Attorney General Mike Hatch. Well, a month ago we had a case where a first-degree murderer was trying to get his sentence commuted. And we then get their record from prison. Now, bear in mind, this man is in prison for first-degree murder. So this man is watched 24 hours a day. This particular individual had 17 or 18 marijuana violations in prison. And I turned to the Chief Justice and I said, now, if we can't, and this is only when he got caught, it's probably like drunk driving. If you've been caught 9 times, it means you've done it 300 times. You've just only been caught those 9. Well, if we can't keep marijuana out of prison, where a guy for first degree murder is locked up 24 hours a day, how are we expected to do it in what's supposed to be a free society? Mm-hmm. How do we do that? How do we fight this supposed war? See, to me, you fight the war by fighting the demand, where we've been fighting it, fighting the supply. You'll never win fighting the supply, because we live in a free country where if you've got the money, you can get anything you want, anything. And so what we've got to do is fight it on the demand side. If you take away the demand, there will be no supply.
Concealed carry?
Concealed carry. I'm a believer in simply making it a not subjective but objective, to where if you qualify, we should have a standard qualification, and it shouldn't be left up to one person's choice as it is now. Right. Now, if somebody doesn't like you personally, you can't get it, or they could be, you know, for whatever reasons, they could decide they're going to deny you of their own personal reasons. I think you set it up, you can make it as stringent as you want, pass a gun training course, pass an accuracy course, requalify every year, all of those things, and that you should be able to if you so desire.
Bonnie, your question?
Yeah,
I'd like to know the governor's definition of to govern and the purpose of government.
Well, my definition is government should do for you what you can't do for yourself. Anything that you can do for yourself, government shouldn't be involved in. Government is there for the common good, the good of the society, and it's our job. And government has a place. There's no doubt about it. As I said, it should be doing, like, you know, building highways, transportation, things of that nature. That's government's role and government's job. But government sometimes today, I think, becomes the answer all to everyone. Government becomes the charity organization. Government becomes any particular group or person that needs help. It's then up to the government to do it. And I think that that's, you know, we need to follow our Constitution a lot more closely of the role that government should play. And that, again, is part of the big plan. That's defining what we believe state government's role should be in our lives.
Follow up, Bonnie. I got the sense there was something behind your question.
Well, it seems like that has been a response to human needs issues that the governor has used that somehow doesn't sit right and lacking. It seems to lack compassion. And I don't know where I got the idea that government should be merciful. Something to do about equality, I suppose.
Well, government should treat everyone equal. You know, we're all equal. We should all be equal under the law and all equal in the eyes of the government. And that's to me, is the role of government, is to govern, to take care of the common needs for everybody out there on a level playing field. The government's job is to try to create as close to a level playing field as it can possibly can for every citizen. But from that point on, it's up to citizens to take the initiative to go out and play the game.
What about the notion that this has come up, I don't want to get too deep into this, we're talking big time political science theory here now, but what about the notion that government has some kind of a responsibility to get people up to the starting line, those who are starting from a position behind other people, in terms of leveling that playing field?
Oh, I think certainly that should happen. I think your strong case for that in many ways is the Hmong population. They're refugees. They're here because they supported our government over in Southeast Asia, and then were virtually kicked out of their country when the war ended, and they were forced to come here. And I think that we have a responsibility to them because of the loyalty that they showed to us to get them to that starting point. They're hardworking people. They'll carry the ball if they're given the opportunity to do so. You know, and going back to the question earlier, the guy that called about the tragic situation of the homeless, the chemical dependency. Again, I don't believe it's government's job because you're chemical dependent to ensure that you're not. That's a choice you make in life. If you become dependent upon chemicals, that's a choice you made, and a choice you have to live with, and a choice that you have to make to get out of it.
Mm-hmm. Joe, your question?
Hi, Governor. How you doing?
Good.
Just wanted to say a good luck in the new year, and I'm a supporter, and I like having you as governor.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
My question, though, is what's your opinion on the situation with this love fest between Republicans, especially in Minnesota, and I'm not a Republican, and I know you're not, and George W. Bush? I mean, Republicans, to me, I thought always stood for pro-defense and pro-strong character, and, you know, John McCain is the man for that. I mean, I'm a Democrat. I voted for you, and if McCain makes it past the primaries, I will most likely vote for him. I mean, the guy has a compelling history. He's got solid credentials in terms of his personal commitment to issues, reform, and just good character. And why do you think there's this love fest between the Republicans and George W. Bush, someone who obviously came into this world way beyond anybody else?
Well, I think what it is the fact that the ultimate result for the two-party system and the way they think is win at all cost. We need to provide a candidate that can win. And so they're going to look at simply who is the most winnable candidate. I mean, let's face it, they've gone 8 years out of the White House now. They want it back, and they want it back badly. I agree with you. I think Senator McCain is outstanding. We tried to recruit him. He belongs in the Reform Party. John McCain should be the presidential candidate for the Reform Party, because everything that he stands for is right in the Reform Party planks. But he's a diehard Republican who probably, you know, for whatever reason, doesn't want to get involved in the third party movement. Mm-hmm. But I believe the senator should be a Reform Party candidate. But again, it's winning. What it comes down to is winning, and I think that's what it is. They feel that George W., the governor of Texas, has the best chance of winning back the White House, and ultimately that's the ultimate goal. It isn't who ends up in the White House, it ends up which party controls the White House.
Are you satisfied with the people who likely will end up as the Reform Party candidates for president? I mean, are these the best people to carry the Reform Party banner next year?
I don't know if they're the best, but it's the old saying, you go with what brung you here. And if that's the only ones that are stepping forward, well, then you got to play the cards you're dealt, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so certainly if it comes down to Trump and Buchanan, I'm going to support Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Without any doubt in my mind on doing so. I question Buchanan's motives for joining the Reform Party. You know, it's come to my attention that he has quite a debt from his last presidential election that he still has to pay off, and how nice it is to get that Reform Party money that's waiting for him that can pay off that debt.
I know you've said repeatedly you're not running for president, you don't want to be president, you have no interest in being president. But come next August, if the Reform Party people look around and say, you know, this whole thing is going down the tubes, none of these candidates are the people we want to represent us, Governor Ventura, would you at least enter the race and carry the ball for us for a couple of months?
No.
Wouldn't do it?
No.
Barb, your question, please.
Hi, Governor.
Hi, Barb. How are you?
Good. Say, I'm calling from Duluth up here, and I'm just curious about, I got my license plate fee here for my new used vehicle. And I know that you've made some comments about that, and I have lots of relatives right across the border here over in Superior, and
yep.
They pay about $45 for the exact same vehicle I am driving right now, and mine just came for $242.
Yeah.
Are you going to help me out with that here soon?
I hope so. It was in my budget last time, but unfortunately, the Republicans would not have anything to do with it. The Democrats on the Senate side came across and supported a flat fee for those license tabs, but the last session, the Republicans would have nothing to do with that. But now they're on board. Everything that I'm hearing from the Republican side in the House is that they too want to do something about license tabs. So I got a feeling it's going to happen this session, and hopefully we'll get them at least to $75, where the most you'll pay for that license tab when you go to renew it will be $75.
And you think there's enough money elsewhere to pick up the difference?
Oh, there's enough money simply by if we want to use the projected forecast of revenue, we've got enough money right there to do it. You know, if the forecast of incoming revenue, we could easily do it that way. We can also shift over some of the tax that goes on new cars. You know, I believe that the sales tax spent on new cars should really go into the transportation system. They should not go into the general fund. I'm a firm believer in user fees. I like fees that when you're taxed for something, you know exactly what it's going to be spent on.
Speaking of sales taxes, is it time to start hitting up the internet sales to collect sales tax on that?
I think that that's inevitable, that it'll have to happen, because internet sales are going to bite into retail sales at the local level, to where you're going to start losing revenue from sales locally via the internet. And I think that something will have to be done about it, because it is sales, and regardless if you do it over the internet or do it at the local department store, it should kind of all fall under the same umbrella.
Tara, your question before we run out of time here?
I just have some kudos for Governor Ventura. I think you're doing a great job. I love your politics. I love that you're honest. I don't always agree with your all of your statements, but that doesn't matter. We're human, and so we can disagree about
Absolutely, we can.
But you get things done, and you speak your mind. You don't change what you're saying depending on who you're talking to. You're not tied to some particular policy or platform, so you always have to say something in particular. I think you're great, and I think you're honest, because you have no reason not to be, and I think that some people need to look at that and not give you such a hard time. And I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
I will vote for you again. I would vote for you for president.
Well, that That you don't have to worry about. But governor, maybe. We'll see what happens 3 years from now. But, of course, the first lady will have a lot to say on that deal, too.
Has she enjoyed 1999?
Except for her bout of illness, that mono that didn't seem to want to go away. She actually had three reoccurrences of it to where she thought she was over it and then picked up her workload and then the mono reoccurred again. She's one of those rare people that has a real hard time getting rid of it, and I think she's finally over it. She got it last February, and it's carried through almost to about November, you know, but she's doing a whole lot better now, and her health is strong again, and so she's enjoying her work right now, I think.
Come this time next year.
And I still advocate that First Lady should be paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do an unbelievable amount of work for the state of Minnesota, of which they get nothing for it. You realize it comes with the territory, and maybe Terry, my first lady, won't get paid, but I'd sure like to see down the line whoever fills this office later on that something be done, because they are definitely ambassadors for the state of Minnesota, and they do work on behalf of the state of Minnesota, and when you do work, you should be paid for doing work.
Come this time next year, what should citizens, how should they rank you? What should they look for and say, well, he said he was going to do this, and by golly, he did it.
Well, I think that they, if they look over the past year, I promised to give the rebate back, and I did. I promised to get do my best to get the session done on time, and we accomplished that. I would say a year from now, I would look at, we'll be putting forth a second biannual budget, and hopefully we'll be coming forth with some meaningful property tax reform. Matt Smith is working on that right now. That's as convoluted as that is. It takes a while. You can't change it overnight.
Governor, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks,
Happy
Gary.
New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. Always a pleasure, and Happy New Year to everyone out in Minnesota. And again, I'm going to take the time here to say, please, if you're going to drink, don't drive New Year's night.
Governor Jesse Ventura, our guest on this first hour of Midday. It's 5 minutes now before 12.